Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Moonlighters Club. My name is Joel, your host. If you are new to what we do here, we interview entrepreneurs who at one time or currently were employees, people living that double lifestyle, hence the title Moonlighters. I was fortunate enough to meet this individual in Boston at the Assembly of Black Possibilities, which was held by the Boston Ujima Project. You were actually a big part of getting all that together. So I'll be quiet for a hot second. I'll let you introduce yourself.
My name is Charnay. And yes, I am all things. But I think before I get into like who I am, it's probably a good way to maybe shout out like whose I am. So I'm just going to share a little bit so you can know, you know, where I'm coming from. I'm basically, you know, a strong Black woman. Power to the people. It's Black History Month, gotta represent. But I come from a long line of serial entrepreneurs and those who kind of came through adversity and were sitting on top. So I am the granddaughter of John and Alma Gray, sharecroppers from the rural South. And, you know, they worked hard. My grandfather picked tobacco, became a serial entrepreneur later on in life. The sharecropper picked 200 pounds of cotton a day. And she became like a caretaker for her family, but also somebody that supported entrepreneurs and helped creatives in her space. My parents, two Philly lovebirds, Stewie and Sandra, you know, again, social entrepreneur on my dad's side. And then my mom, she focused on education, and she's the reason why, you know, I was able to go to Rutgers University and graduate undergrad, political science, Africana studies, but also a master's degree. She was the first to go to college, so it was like, you have no choice but to go to college. Well, go ahead and get that master's degree. So I share a little bit of that just to let you know that we really wouldn't have a conversation today if it wasn't for obviously God, but those that have come before me and really made a lot of sacrifices to kind of help mold me into a being that can be creative and can do a lot of different things. So that's a little bit about me.
Thank you for being on the show, Charnay. That was really nice of you to lay all that out. Shout out to your family.
The Assembly of Black Possibilities was like a seed that I planted maybe a year and a half or 2 years prior. Never heard anything else about it again. And then Nia randomly hit me up like, hey, like, let's make it happen. And so I was like, are you serious? It's crazy how things kind of turn around. But I was the event architect. So I curated all of the content and the kind of overall vision. And then we were a team because, you know, it is Ujima. So we are moving in solidarity, and it's not one, it's all as a collective. And so I was so happy to meet you, but really excited to have all the other fellow speakers involved in the project because we couldn't make it happen without you guys. So shout out to you as well.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely get in there. It was awesome. It was really awesome. And I like the phrase you just said, event architect. I had to write that down because I feel like I'm gonna need to use that in the future because that was I think we oversimplify careers sometimes just because it's convenient. So like the whole term event planner, you're like, all right, but then you think about everything that goes into all the stuff that you're doing, whether you're planning, I don't care if it's a wedding, a birthday party, whatever. If there's speakers involved, if there's logistics involved, you actually do a lot of stuff. So I feel like the word architect really encompasses all of that. And when you say planner, I don't know, maybe that's just me. It just seems like you're just scheduling things, but in reality, you're coordinating like all kinds of stuff, you know, before, during, and after. So speaking of college, how'd the major come about? How did you know this is what I want to get a degree in?
Great question. So let's see. I just always did well. So let's start from the beginning. I studied political science and Africana studies in undergrad. So that's a double major there. And I always, ever since I was a little girl, like, I'm about my people. Okay. So I wanted all black books, all black dolls, all the things. I'm doing all of my book reports on my grandmother and our actual history and not like some random person in the, textbook or whatever. So I don't know. I was out the womb conscious. That's number one. So I'm like, I have to study this. And I found out about Africana studies. At the same time, in high school, I had a really great high school teacher. She taught AP history. I went to Paul Six, so shout out to Paul Six. And I just loved history, and I also loved Black history, and I understood that there were some folks that really, really felt like policy and politics was the way for liberation. So I realized that I could be a double major and take on Africana studies and political science. And that was going to be my way of like learning all that I need to learn and navigate all I need to navigate to eventually be some politico and helping my people towards liberation and making this world a better place. So that's why I chose political science in Africana studies for undergrad. Clearly, I'm not in politics, but that's how I got to my that's how I arrived at my major. And it was really a cool experience. I actually started at Hampton University. And so I went to an HBCU for 2 years. And then I transferred to Rutgers. So I got like the best of both worlds in that sense.
When you graduated, did you, was it hard to figure out a career line for that? Did you just jump right in? Did you have to kind of do some searching and figuring out?
So when I graduated undergrad, I had a lot of cool internships prior to. And I went right into grad school. So I didn't have to get a big girl job just yet. I worked for some, I supported some nonprofits. And then I kept up with like a fellowship that I had, with like a local think tank in New Jersey. And so that's what I did. If I skipped to grad school, where I did pu public administration and a nonprofit management concentration, I knew I wanted to be in DC. This is really like crazy. And not, I don't think most people should go about it this way, but I knew I wanted to live in DC. I did not want to stay in New Jersey. So I only applied to jobs in DC. And like, I thought I wanted to be in politics, but the jobs, they were kind of paying low a little bit, on the Hill and all that other kind of stuff.
Spoiler alert, they still are. Like when you go on job boards now, you're like, bro, how do they afford rent anywhere with these?
Yeah,
It's
like what's going
crazy.
on? But I had that nonprofit management concentration and focus as well. So I got on idealist.org and I was like, okay, let me shoot my shot here. I applied for an association job because in DC, there are tons of nonprofits and associations. So I applied there mainly because they were located in DC and they hit me up. So I actually had a job secured before I graduated grad school and they paid for my relocation. And I came out there and it was a wrap. It was like the best decision, but I was not working in politics. I was not on the Hill. I was not doing anything policy related. I was doing like administrative work for an international nonprofit. But it ended up being just like a really dope experience. I was there for 9.5 years, so obviously it was good. I got promotions and raises every year. I was able to design my own job description for various roles, and I ended up being able to travel around the world for free in luxury. So it's just God is good. Like you ask God for some things, and He's like, girl, you don't know what you need.
I like how you threw in the in luxury part. That was nice.
I
That's
mean, it was.
I have a question. So you where you I'm going somewhere with this. Where are you from originally?
I'm from South Jersey.
You're from South Jersey. You know you're well versed about who your family is, what they've accomplished. You're for your people. You're joining the workforce. I don't know why I'm sounding like I have this Philly accent coming out of nowhere. I'm not from Philly. You get a job. You've had it for 9.5 years, so you probably already answered that. But my question is, were you still able to be your full, complete self in the workforce now that you're out of school? You know, everything you've learned, your personality, were you able to completely be that at ease when you got into this career, alongside with what you were doing professionally?
So at that time, I was still finding myself, right? Like at that time, my family's old school. So they're like, girl, jobs aren't supposed to be fun. Like a job's a job, clock in, clock out. You're not supposed to be fulfilled. You're supposed to be getting money. Girl, you're getting good money. A girl, you living, and so I was just like finding myself. So I actually, I think that it took time. And what happened was I was doing this job that was pretty basic. I was bored. I felt like I was like, did I go to grad school for this? So I went to my boss and I just kind of like let him know, like, hey, like I can be doing more than what you have me doing, and I'm not as happy. And he said something to me. He was like, basically summarizing, like, the best thing you can do is learn how to do everybody's job. Like, no job should be like beneath you. But like, I hear you. I'm gonna give you like some other things as long as you can do this plus more. Now, in hindsight, that's a trap because now I'm actually asking for more work at the same pay. Like that was bad business. But I was able to get into event management, and which I lean into a little bit now. So at that time, I just started the craft. I just found out about this thing called hospitality. I didn't know that hospitality was beyond like working at a hotel. Hospitality includes travel. It includes like putting on conferences and events and things of that nature. And so I started doing that and traveling like around the world, putting on conferences and things. And I had a really great knack for it. They were paying people a lot of money to do it, and I was catching their mistakes. So I told my boss, like, hey, I can do this. You don't have to pay them, pay me. And long story short, I developed my niche. So I didn't know anything about that. I didn't go to school for hospitality, but that became my niche and conference management and all of the things. And I got all the professional development accolades around that. At the same time, I'm working in the scientific field, and I'm like, why are there all these white folks and no black people? You know, there are black scientists out there. What's happening? So I was having these conversations, and basically, they were like, we don't know what you're talking about. We don't know what to do. So again, I took on another project, and I was like, well, let me handle outreach. And before DEI was a thing, I was doing DEI for my organization, and I was going to different like STEM conferences and things like that, letting people know that like we exist, what kind of funding is available to them and for their labs. So those two things in terms of like supporting BIPOC folks and the underrepresented, connecting them to resources, that started at my job like straight out of grad school when I was in DC. As well as my niche area of like event management, curation, and all of the likes. So I was finding myself and I just like landed there. I landed in what felt good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's and look at you being a pioneer. It's coming in. It's funny that you say that though. When people talk about DEI, and I think it's become a negative buzzword now because it's become official. So when things become official, they get you can add too much structure. So as a black person, you're hearing these words like DEI, but then you're seeing it being implemented in a way that you're like, I don't even know how this is benefiting folks. But for the people who are upset about it, you have to think of it from our perspective. Like when I moved back to Boston, I graduated. Where I was staying in like the edge of Roxbury, Dorchester. I lived with my the grandmother at the time before I moved into my own spot. Everyone I'm around and all the people I know are black, to a small, much smaller extent, Dominican. So that's all I see. Like, and it's like all we saw growing up. So then when I would go to work, you or get on the train or the bus, whatever may have you, there's a line that hits where it flips on its head. So everyone who's now in this neighborhood are in this building that I work with becomes white. So the way you talk, the words I use, be it professional or non-professional, even because you have fun with your coworkers, it all changes. So you naturally start to think as a black person, like a bunch of stuff kicks in, imposter syndrome kicks in, awkwardness fit, and then you just start to think like, are there other black folks out here trying to work at these places? Are they not? Like, what's going on? You just don't get it. So in terms of people who, why we try to find that or look for that at companies we work for, it just makes things more comfortable. It helps you. It's just like when people hire folks or invest, they tend to do so to people that remind them of things like their kids. Or when people say good culture fits, those are people that you like and you want to be around you. And generally, those are people that you're used to being around. So if you're black, if you're Italian, if you are Irish and you grew up in a specific style of community, you do lose that at some cases when you join the workforce because you might meet a bunch of folks who are nothing like you are used to, which is fine until you realize you're here a lot. You know, I want to connect with folks who are like me. I want to. Not everyone, right? But it'd be nice to have a couple, you know, who know exactly what I'm talking about when I get angry, when I get sad. This thing that popped up on the news. Oh man, we all understand where we're coming from. So that's what it all falls into. So I applaud you for doing that work because a lot of us, including myself, would just go there and just kind of just get into your own mood. But it was cool to see that there were black folks. Nah, like let me ask some questions. Let me see what's going on. Well, who's filling out these applications? Who's putting them out there? So salute to you for doing that. And for those who are confused, that's why we think that.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up something, not to like take the conversation off course, but you talk about culture fit and people hiring for culture fit, which I totally get. If you have a good culture, a positive culture, you don't have a toxic culture. But I think that's also a part of the problem a little bit, because at least in some of the spaces that I've been in, most recently in the finance space and impact investing space, it's very white. And so when they say, hey, are you good for our culture? Is it a good culture fit? You have to ask yourself these questions. Like, I'm wearing this blonde hair right now, but don't get it twisted. You know what I mean? So, I think it does something to them when they feel like you don't fit the culture. And I've had people have conversations with me about that. And I'm like, oh, so I'm too black, huh? I'm blackety black. You didn't know that. Oh, interesting. You know what I mean? And so now it's a problem. So culture fit is cool when it's not toxic, it's positive, and you have a diverse culture already. But a lot of these organizations and industries, the culture is not something that I want to fit into, actually. I want to be a disruptor.
So speaking of disruption, you said 9.5 years. Now I'm familiar with the work you do, kind of being an event architect. After 9.5 years, is that what you jumped into? Is that when you decided to do that? Explain that transition.
So after 9.5 years, I had been there for quite some time and really hit a glass ceiling. And so it was time, but I wanted to make sure I was doing something meaningful. And I came across impact investing, and I came across this organization in Philly, which is not too far from me, that supported impact investors. And so they were looking for a director of, I want to say, communications and events. That's a shame. I forgot what my role was at that time. But I did handle their, I led their impact investing conference. So I put that all together by myself, essentially. Like I didn't necessarily have a team, although team members and colleagues all chipped in and all worked together, but it was, you know, at my direction. And it was such a success. But for me, I hopped into a new industry. I learned of this thing called impact investing. What is impact investing? Like, nobody knows. None of the black people that I knew what that was. And so there are actually investors out here that want to give you money for your company if you are producing good impact, if you are doing good work, if you want to change the world, if you want to stop the horrible things that's happening with Mother Earth and help with climate change. If you want to focus on more funding going to BIPOC founders and entrepreneurs, if you are interested in a more sustainable, you know, place, there are people out there that are interested in investing in your company, in your business, instead of just like a philanthropic donation, right? So that's what I that's what I've been doing.
How long did it take you to make it a formal business? Was it like immediate after? Like, did you, would you?
Yeah, so actually what happened was I hopped into impact investing and I was still working for the man.
Yep, okay.
And through that, my eyes opened wide and I was just like, I was actually doing events on the side. So I
Okay.
had a company.
Yep.
It was called Missy C Suites. And it was very cheesy, you know, really cutesy, like of typical event stuff. But when I got into the impact investing world, I met different people and was introduced to some folks that had asked if I wanted to pick up like some contract work, freelance and things like that. And so I was like, I don't need to have this cutesy name or cutesy business, you know, to do some of these events. Like maybe I need to elevate a little bit. And so I actually, in March 2022, I created a Noir Impact LLC. And Noir Impact is a company that was birthed from being in this impact investing space and just unlocking so much information. Being in rooms where most people wouldn't have access to, some of the wealthiest people in the region or in the country. And in some respects, as I've moved on in my career, I've been on a more global stage with global impact investors. So, dare I say, some of the wealthiest folks in the world, you know, you understand that they may think a certain way, they may look at businesses in a certain manner. And I don't think our communities understand that. So what does that look like? That looks like us leaving a bag on the table just because we don't know it exists, or because we are not speaking their language, using their terminology. You know, we could have a great business full of impact, but if you're not branding yourself in the right way, if you're not measuring your impact, you are going to miss this person that would potentially like invest in your company. You're also looking at traditional investors. Most black folks don't realize that there is something called impact investing. So they only go after traditional investors that are specifically looking at the ROI, and that's it. But there are people out there that are willing to look at the impact as well. Yes, they want to see a return, or a return may be looked at as a plus, but they want to see the impact. They want to support a black founder or an entrepreneur. Yes, it's controversial right now for some, but there are many impact investors that still believe in helping and investing and giving founders a space and an opportunity and a platform. And so Noir Impact is just me doing my job as a good black person and making sure we all eat, we all have access. What I learn, you learn. However I can help, whatever I, you know, get from just being in this space, I exist to liberate my people, to assist in liberation. I don't exist to just be with that crab in a barrel mindset. So anything that I do, I'm going to try to help my community, whether that's in events or whether that's in impact investing. So that's my piece
So
right there.
you started 2 years ago, 2022?
I started Noir Impact,
Noir.
my company, yes,
Okay.
2022.
How have things been going?
So things have been going great. Last year was a phenomenal year. I'm so excited because I was able to I had the most business I've ever had. I didn't even market myself. I wasn't advertising it, but people just referrals were flowing
Yeah.
and people were making connections for me. And it was a great year. And it was a year where I was like, wow, you have something special here, you know? And guess what? When it's for you, it's for you. Nothing is going to pass you by. Last year was a year where I was like, okay, you don't have to play small anymore. You don't have to hide anymore. You know, you can just show up, be yourself, and attract, you know, business. And so it was also the year that I learned how to take on more of an abundance mindset. And honestly, it's working. So, you know, let's leave lack behind. Let's kick out scarcity and start making decisions with an abundance mindset, whether we have it or not, because it definitely has worked for me. And I thank God every day for that.
Yeah, one of the best quotes I ever had heard was, "Get the work first, then worry about how you're gonna handle it." It was because you can kind of get in your head like, "I don't know if I can do this," but you don't know if you'll ever get the opportunity. So, get it, figure it out. Yeah, it seems like you'd be a pretty good networker, like that in terms of finding contacts, reaching out. Is it what are you not? What do you hate about running your own business? What task are you like, I do not want to do this again if I can help
My gosh, I don't want to deal with taxes. I don't want to
it?
deal with accounting. I want to be able to one of my goals, seriously, is I want to hire someone. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I mean, I don't personally, I feel like I'm not there yet. Girl, you have to do some work yourself. But I want to be on that level where I can hire a bookkeeper and a person that's managing all the money and the taxes and stuff like that. And again, abundance mindset here, you know, that's what I'm gonna need for all the dollars that are gonna roll through. That's not here yet.
Yeah.
But I just think that that's something that I need to work on.
So now are you currently multitasking? Are you currently moonlighting? Are you doing your thing and working?
I'm a moonlighter,
Okay.
okay? That's what I do.
Okay.
Moonlight. You have to have multiple streams of income. That's really key. In fact, I read that book. It's actually behind me. Who was that by? Allen is the last name, but I read that in college and it really stuck with me. And my grandfather, I told you at the very beginning, John Gray, Johnny, you know, he always had a hustle. He was always working. And you know, figuring out how to make it happen. And so the same thing goes for me. I like the 9 to 5, let's be honest. I like the 9 to 5 for the benefits. You know, the medical benefits, the 401k, all of that, that's great. When you're an entrepreneur, you gotta pay a higher premium for medical because you don't have a team. The 401k is on you. Ain't nobody else matching nothing. So that's kind of one of the reasons why, because I was tempted to just be a solopreneur last year when things were great. But then Mama Bear, real life happened, and it's I need this insurance, and that Obamacare is not cutting it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. How's the work-life balance? How's that been?
Work-life balance, how's that been? Oh, I look good today, but I got these two beautiful black boys that keep me busy. Delancey, who is 6, and Lennox, pandemic baby, who is 3. They really kind of keep me on my toes, keep my husband and I on our toes. And so work-life balance is great now that I'm in a new position. I have a new job that is positive, such a beautiful atmosphere, and it's Black-owned,
Nice.
founded by Black folks, and it's a very diverse team. We're doing really good work. And they respect your time, and they offer, like great work-life balance, unlimited PTO situation, which is really nice. It's hard when you want to be, how should I say this? Like for me, working and having my own company, I'm all like even after five. Now I'm noir, right? So I'm always clocked in. And so now I want to kind of be a present mom after five. I want to figure out how can I do that where it's like, yes, I'm still making dinner for everybody, cleaning up, nighttime routine, but like my brain is still kind of thinking about other projects. Like, how can I shut that off? If I were to be honest, it's a little bit hard for me to do that. So it's bath time, but I'm sitting in the bathroom while they're in the bath, and I'm like, I might have my phone out and I'm, doing whatever I need to do for noir.
So many things floating in my head now, based off this conversation. Magic wand time. You've talked about bookkeeping, accounting, but if there was one person, one role, or one thing that could help you or you can improve on now, outside of bookkeeping or accounting, what would that be? What if there's one person you can meet, or one thing someone could do for you, or one thing you accomplish, or that could help you? What can help you get your business to the next level?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have the answer to it. What's a good, what's, who's going to help me get to the next level? I don't have the answer to that. I think it doesn't matter what accolades anyone could have. It's not even about that. It's sometimes about what God places in you, and He can use anybody and anything to like set you off and take you off to the next level. So I don't have anyone particularly in mind. I do know that what I need moving forward, what I believe I'm working towards moving forward, is simply more confidence and knocking out that imposter syndrome. So like basically what you just said, hey, let me just take the gig and figure it out later. I'm very strategic. I like to take my time on different things, and I'm like, oh, do I have enough people? Do I have enough contractors to support this? But I want to be able to just like know, oh, yes, you have this, I can do it. Because I have had opportunities fall in my lap in recent times, and I passed along the opportunity because I'm like, hey, I don't have a big enough team, and I also have a 9 to 5. So maybe I'm not the right fit. Maybe you should, find a larger firm or whatever, because I know you're going to want a lot of the time. So I just personally would love to feel more confident in taking on super big projects. And then also, as I'm talking to you, I would love to be able to employ more people. Like not just contractors, subcontractors, but I would love to generate wealth in that way. Like get to a point where, yes, I can help create jobs as well. I can scale in that small way. That would be really cool. And I could also at that point take on, larger projects that come along as well.
Nice. Well, we're gonna hope for that for you. It's definitely along the way. How can people support or find you, or what would you want people to know about you and your business moving forward? Should they be looking for something coming down the pipeline? Should they reach out to you?
Yes, well, you can always find me at noirimpact.com. That's noir with an E. And feel free to email me, Charney, Charney, at noirimpact.com. I could always use some more social media followers, so hit the like button on LinkedIn, but then also follow me on Instagram, Noir Impact. I would really appreciate that as well. And listen, I'm someone that, I'm a connector, right? So just say hello, say what's up, let's be in community with one another, and, go from there.
I appreciate it. And I like the connector thing. It's huge. It's funny how needed that is. Even with the technology that we have now, how many folks I've just happened to introduce because they're friends and didn't know each other. And I'm like, you two, like, it's crazy how valuable that is. Especially in the work that you're doing. There are, and you probably know that you're on the ground. There are a lot of crazy, dope, productive, beneficial businesses in the world that I've never heard of, and that investors have never heard of, and people are doing crazy great work. You just happen to see them, randomly one day, and that's all they need is that proper introduction. So you're definitely fighting the good fight. And for everyone listening, definitely reach out to Trinae. Let's keep that impact going, man. We're gonna need it more. Well, we need it more than ever every single day, I feel like. So,
Sure.
no,
And
I.
you're doing good work yourself, and you're connecting people every day. You're doing the good work. Let's all support this black man, black men. We support out here. And we appreciate what you're doing, right? Because who thinks about us, that folks that have the 9 to 5 and the side hustle, or maybe it's not even a side hustle, it's
Yeah,
a full
it's a
hustle
full
plus a
thing.
full time. You know what I mean? And so I appreciate you, and I'm sure all of your followers do as well. So it's a mutual thing. What I think people don't understand is that it takes collective agency to make progress and to get somewhere. It is not a one man, one woman show. We came here together. Our ancestors came here together collectively. And so that's how we're going to, get out of this thing. So definitely kudos to you as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate your time. Again, we'll do everything we can to support you. For those listening, stay tuned. The Moonlighters Club will have more content coming your way soon. We'll be doing a lot more of these interviews. We're prepping to do another showcase, I think like June-ish, but it'll be Baltimore again. But we're looking for ways to, I'll probably be reaching out to you. We're looking for more ways to, do it in more places because we've done it in Boston before. We did it in Baltimore. Now we're just trying to grow it out.
Come to Philly.
Philly's great. I love to do it in Philly. I would love to.
Let's
I met a couple
work it
folks.
out.
Matter of fact, I've met a couple folks at Cherry Street Pier, I think it was,
Okay,
where they have
yes.
those. They have
Great
a
place.
I met two black designers. One's name was Akori Hanzo. He makes miniature action figures of black historical folks, so
I
rappers,
need.
Harry, activists, Harry Tubman, like all like cool. And then this dude, I think his designer name, Tomcat 23, draws, paints. Bought a couple things from him. Does a lot of Afrofuturism stuff. But they're right in Cherry Street Pier, right by the water. So no,
Okay.
I would love to go to Philly and meet some more folks. But yeah, we can go on. I gotta check in more often with you. You're doing a lot of cool stuff. Plus, there's a lot of folks who I want to be able to connect you with. Now that I'm organized. So, Sharnay, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And everyone, we'll see you on the next one.